Hi, everybody. Welcome to No Story is Sacred. If you've never listened before, we're four siblings who grew up talking about this art of storytelling. Now that we're adults, we're still talking about it, and we're inviting you to join the conversation. I'm Alex, and the good is going to be interred with my bones.
I'm Pippin, and come I to speak what I do know.
Ooh, I'm Kat, and I have a lean and hungry look.
And I'm Brendan, and I let slip my dog of bark?
No. Hi, Benji.
That would have been a really great time for him to bark.
I was hoping he'd get the hint, but he didn't.
Like the one time.
Yeah.
If it helps, I think my cat will also be making an appearance, Smoochie. he's feeling very loving and needy tonight.
Yeah.
Much like Calpurnia. Am I right, guys? Am I right? But wait, what's this about Calpurnia or being Let Slip the Dogs of War?
Well, that's a good question, because today we're talking about the classic Shakespeare play, Julius Caesar. So spoilers abound. If you want other specific content warnings, check out the show notes on nostorysacred.com. For those of you who haven't read or seen the play, the summary from IMDb is, "The growing ambition of Julius Caesar is a source of major concern to his close friend, Brutus. Cassius persuades him to participate in his plot to assassinate Caesar, but they have both sorely underestimated Mark Antony."
Is the IMDb summary the best one we can find? Because this is really inaccurate even to the play.
Because Caesar didn't really have ambition.
Yeah, no, and also it wasn't a concern to Brutus until after Cassius came up to him. So this seems to be a summary from somewhere else. IMDb writer is inaccurate as opposed to the play.
Well, every time I was looking up, summaries for Caesar, either I was getting the whole history of Julius Caesar, or just two long summaries of the play. Mm-hmm. And that seemed like a, really quick couple of line one.
Well, you know what, guys? Fuck it. Let's take it from here.
Yeah, it's a really terrible one-line summary. I think we need to...
Yeah, because it's also... I mean, it's not just beyond... It's not just terrible. It's not just... Did these people read this, like, the script but not watch the movie, as so many of our things are? This is just inaccurate.
Okay, no, wait, to be fair, it has a bit of the order wrong.
Yeah.
But,
uh-huh.
The growing ambition of Julius Caesar, whether it actually was ambition or not, was a source of concern,
for Brutus.
To Brutus. It just so happened that he was convinced of it by Cassius.
Yeah.
And by the conspirators who brought out forged letters from the Roman people. You know.
Dear Brutus, Caesar is te dums. Lol, the Romans. It seems legit to me, guys.
It's like that joke about the teacher receives a letter from the parents saying, "Dear Mrs. Teacher, let Billy go to the school fair." Signed, Billy's parents. Very seriously, an adult.
What's a Roman name for John Doe?
Flavius? I don't know.
Johnius Doeus?
Here's the other thing, though. The other a line from there is that, but they have both sorely underestimated Mark Antony. Also inaccurate. Caesar was like, he hadn't underestimated Mark Antony at all. He knew exactly what was going on with Mark Antony. He's like, he's a cool
Mark Antony? You my bro.
Yeah. And Mark Antony's like, "I love you, Caesar. Would you like to have this crown?" "No, no. Are you sure you don't want this crown?" No. I couldn't.
Well, the summary wasn't saying that Caesar underestimated Mark Antony. It's saying that Cassius and Brutus did, which is still inaccurate because Cassius the whole time was going, "Why are we letting him do anything?"
No.
Yeah, that's true.
You idiot. Don't let him talk.
Did Cassius want Mark Antony dead too? And it was Brutus who was like, "No, that would seem a bit like overkill."
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Cassius or one of the other.
I think their concern was like, "Oh God, Mark Antony's actually really loved by the people. We don't want to press it."
And he really loves Caesar. Could this go awry?
He's strong and he's pretty and he's charismatic. Mm-hmm. Not someone you want on the other side of your coup.
I'm pretty sure Mark Antony is that guy who will let you borrow his truck when you need to move. He'll help you move your couch.
Yeah.
He'll kill his nephew for you.
What?
Wait, what? Just throwing that in there.
What was it, like a plebeius? was talking about, like, I'll let you kill my brother if you kill, well, you're her sister's son.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be fair, at least in the version I watched, he looked real kind of sad about it.
Not in our version.
Oh, really?
He's like, okay. Well, to be fair, it was Charlton Heston. So,
yeah.
Trying to look young and not succeeding.
Oh.
And he was getting a massage at the time.
Yeah. It was a weird scene, a weird scene.
So let's just kind of do like the play-by-play here.
Okay, good call, good call. Let's,
You're funny. I want to acknowledge what you just did there.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Holy shit, I just got it. Fuck you. That's terrible.
Wait, it took you that long?
Okay, fuck you too.
Burn!
Okay. So, really things start kicking off when we get the soothsayer coming on the scene, right?
Well, okay, so to start off with, we gotta just lay the scene in Fair Verona, etc. That was a Shakespeare joke too. Did you guys get it? Laugh!
Ha 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 ha.
The plaything got a fuck you. Okay. So, the play starts with, Caesar has just, beaten some dude.
Pompey,
thank you. And everybody in Rome, I guess, is like, yay, we love Caesar. And a whole bunch of people are like, the fuck, you were just loving Pompey and now you're loving Caesar. You're just, whatever. You guys are fools.
Hard hearts and cruel men of Rome, if you're curious. Ooh.
And so, I mean, that's the setting. That's the beginning. Caesar's just shown up. He's, just beaten some dude. He is ripe for shit to go down if people, and everybody loves him. And he's like, you know, now would be a really great time for me to take over everything. But so far as we know, at the moment, he's not interested in doing that.
He's only going to take a slight dictator for life.
We don't know. The thing is, we don't know that. That is the fear of Cassius and his fellow at this point. Are they even conspirators?
Well, I think they pretty early on were just in it so that they could be the future dictators for life. I mean, come on.
Well, so I was reading a fascinating analysis that suggested that there are no definite good or bad guys in this. It is suggested that the reason they did stuff was for envy, but they do not believe it at the time.
Or they were deluding themselves.
Exactly. It's only really Brutus who comes out with he straight up did not, he was a friend of Caesar. He really believed in making sure that Rome survived.
Yeah, he's a tragic hero.
He is a tragic hero. It's just that he let himself get bamboozled.
Mm-hmm.
And then he let Mark Antony give a speech, which was just
That was a
stupid,
dumb move on his part. Well, to be fair, let's just establish that murdering your political rivals in general is a bad plan.
Bad plan.
And then letting their best friend speak at their funeral is a bad follow-up.
Not the smartest plan.
Like, it's a bad plan from the start.
Even if the best friend is like, of course I won't say anything bad about the coup. I see now that you were totally right.
Don't leave him to speak on his own.
Murdered my friend in cold blood.
I will follow your instructions to the letter.
You don't have to stick around to make sure.
Do you promise not to say anything bad? I definitely, definitely promise.
You're all honorable men.
And I will mention that so many times.
Definitely not to the point of sarcasm.
Definitely.
Not. No,
definitely.
Totes not.
And then, of course, following it up with like, oh, by the way, I have Caesar's will, and you get a car, and you get a car, and you get a car.
But don't worry, because the honorable men said that Caesar was a bad guy.
So what do you think, Romans?
I like how the Roman populace is a character in and of itself. Like, and not individual.
Also kind of easily manipulated in and of themselves, right?
Which is, that's part of the...
It's like
the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it parallels so nicely with Brutus.
True.
Yeah. Like, Mark Antony never swayed.
No.
Off topic. Just while I'm thinking of it, is there any Discworld novel that sort of follows the plot of Julius Caesar? Because I had an image in my head suddenly of the people of Ankh-Morpork in that situation.
Oh my god. I hate to say it, you know, that does sound like the kind of thing that might have happened eventually. I mean, technically, Terry Pratchett already did his Shakespeare roundabouts when he did, not Witches Abroad.
Weird Sisters.
Which was Macbeth and a bunch of other things. You know, had he lived longer, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's, yeah, steal from tragic. The best, right?
Yeah. Well, because I haven't read all the Discworld novels, so I'm like, surely that has already happened.
I don't believe so.
If it has happened, please, Twitter, let us know.
Let us know.
Because I need to know what novelty items Cut My Own Throat Dibbler managed to have.
Well, wait, you know what? There was one book. It was, I think it was Making Money, that had a noble family very much like the Borgias trying to take down the patrician. But I think that was just general infighting as opposed to a specific call out. Like, political shenanigans, I think, in a lot of ways, most of what we know about political shenanigans in fiction can have a lot to thank Julius Caesar for. But wait! So Mark Antony.
Yeah.
Julius Caesar's best friend. Or at least, you know.
Whatever. They're bros.
Yeah. Caesar's getting old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so far as we know, there's not much in the way of him being, like, actually taking the throne of dictator. But, you know, it's always a possibility the way these things are. He's marching down the streets. Suddenly, soothsayer.
A sayer of sooths.
Who says, beware the Ides of March. The beginning, which is the first of many times that I remember that great line, those Shakespeare plays, they're all quotes. But Ides of March, the 15th of March, which is apparently the actual date of the assassination of the actual Julius Caesar, so well done, Shakespeare.
And a week after this episode comes out.
Nice. Oh, nice timing. I mean, well, you mean we don't, you mean we don't record this the night before?
What?
We totally do.
Yep. Yeah.
This is all 100%.
We're actually talking in real time of whenever you're listening to this.
To you, listener, just for you.
You look really nice today.
Don't be creepy.
You're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, we like you.
You should definitely get that coffee. You deserve it.
Get one from me too while you're at it.
Become a patron at patreon.com.
And if we don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
But no, Shakespeare, drew on historical, accounts.
Drew on, stole.
I think when you're doing a historical play, you can say drew on.
Although the famous line, "Et tu, Brute," was not his.
Well, listen, I tried to defend Shakespeare, but he was a little thief.
He's such a trash baby and I love him. So, soothsayer says beware the Ides of March, and around about this time we have Cassius, the aforementioned conspirator, come up to Brutus, who is an honorable man and a friend of Caesar's, saying, "Hey, Brutus,
buddy.
So, have you ever really thought about this?" And he lays out the whole argument about, you know, could become a dictator, why him, why not us? We're all cool bros, right? Am I right? The argument of, you know, why not you, Brutus? Why not me? Doesn't really, you know, matter to Brutus. What matters is the idea of a dictator instead of a Senate.
Which is a fair worry.
It is an extremely fair worry, and something to be considering in this day and age.
Are you saying that the modern society could have something to learn from Shakespeare?
What? I'm just saying that, you know, there might be a reason that there was some nervousness about the most recent production of Julius Caesar in New York City that took place immediately after the election.
Well, they did that immediately after Obama's election, too. I think every time we have a new president, they put on a production of Julius Caesar to say, by the way, this is why we don't kill our political rivals.
This never ends well.
But also as a kind of a reminder of a certain doom of Damocles, you know, to some people.
Yeah.
Well, I found the play kind of reassuring in the sense that public pressure and stuff that can affect the public itself has been around for centuries. I mean, the scale of it might change, but the core root of it, how easily it is to manipulate people, cough, cough, Brutus, cough, and the public, I mean, cough, cough, Mark Antony's speech, cough.
Cough, cough, Twitter, cough.
Yes, that's what I was getting to, is it's a constant, just the scale changes.
Additionally, the idea that power corrupts absolutely and so forth, we actually see that happening. So we see sort of the slow end of it in Caesar. We do see you know, there's no reason that we shouldn't believe that Caesar was a little bit more reluctant every time when he was offered the crown. I mean, it's quite possible that's where we were headed. But then you see Mark Antony, who was just a sports guy at the beginning. By the end, he's like, yeah, okay, we're going to kill that guy. Nah, while I get massaged. Wait, that's in the movie.
Let's kill these fucks.
Yeah. And you have Brutus, who starts off being like, I'm a bro, walking along, loving Rome. And by the end, he's like really kind of fucked up. His wife's dead and, you know, all sorts of shit is going down.
He's a broken man by the end of the play.
He really is.
Oh, yeah.
So aren't they all yeah. broken men.
I think Mark Antony was okay at the very end.
Yeah, but he's got his own play afterwards to show why he isn't. Well, can I actually jump in for a second?
Do it.
To talk about the whole refusing of the crown thing?
Do it.
Because we never actually see it, right?
No, we get multiple people's.
Yeah, we get like Cassius. Or no, it wasn't even Cassius reporting of it. It was.
No, it was the Casca. Yeah.
Casca's reporting of what happened, how he interpreted it. And then later we get Mark Antony's interpretation of it.
Are you saying there were unreliable narrators involved?
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, you know, that's a really interesting point. This is a play full of unreliable narrators, which I think lends credence to the idea that there are no real villains or heroes in it. Because depending on how you perform it or how you interpret it, it's uncertain.
It's a play about misinformation. You know, even to, like, the last, you know, when we get to Cassius' end.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Oh, play it. That's a fascinating take. A play on misinformation. I like that.
Hadn't thought about that.
No,
take.
Me neither.
I was just like, ooh.
That's really clever.
Social pressure.
I like that. Because it's true. I mean, if you think about the soothsayers, they're all doing it. Oh, and apparently, and this, Alex, this wasn't in the version you and I watched, but a big part of, I guess, in Olivier's rendition of the play, there's a poet that gets killed in the riots. Oh,
yeah, the Casca the Greek. Or Cinna the Greek?
Cinna something. Anyway, but it's the wrong Cinna.
Yeah.
Like a poet gets killed instead of like the dude who actually killed Caesar or something.
That was in my version. I watched the BBC version.
I remember hearing about that one, yeah.
Yeah, it's misinformation. And again, it's the swaying of the crowds. Bro, I'm certain that we're not the first people to think of that, but you're blowing my fucking mind.
Was anyone else kind of bored by the military bit at the end?
Yes.
It was kind of like a letdown of all the comeuppances I felt, but I could have used more comeuppance time.
I think that maybe it would play better on a stage. Because the movie we watched was very concerned in showing all the horses and all the guys.
Oh, I didn't even get horses.
Whereas, I guess in real life history, there was like a 20-day pause between the two different battles that are referenced as happening the day after each other in Shakespeare's play.
Oh, yeah. The actual events were more drawn out.
You know, like real wars are.
Or even just the week of Caesar's death.
Yeah. In terms of history, it still happened really fucking fast. It was like the warnings and the actual death and when shit went down and when the will happened all happened over the course of like 3 months.
Yeah.
Getting back to the plot.
Ugh, plot.
Plot. It's not like we care about that. They talk to Brutus. Brutus has a bunch of thoughts. And eventually he gets convinced. His wife is like, hey, man. Aren't we married? Shouldn't you tell me if you're conspiring against people?
What? Honey.
Yeah, when we got married, we agreed to share half of everything, and that includes half of your conspiracy and plots of murder.
Honey, I noticed that you have a conspiracy cloak in the wardrobe. Do you have anything to tell me?
His and hers matching conspiracy cloaks.
Oh, there's a discount sale on them. If you buy them in bulk.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
As they clearly did.
Yes.
and the plan is got up that they're going to totally kill Caesar. And they're going to do it on the Senate. And then they do. Ta-da! They kill Caesar. Although, it's a big betrayal.
Didn't like tons of people try and warn Caesar to like, yeah, just don't go.
Right. I forgot. Calpurnia, his poor wife.
Like, I had a dream where he got super stabinated. And then it was like, who was it that talked to him? Like a different Brutus?
No. It was one of the other conspirators. One who's like, don't worry, I totally know how to butter him up and get him to show up on the Senate floor so that we can murder him. And he shows up and he's like, oh yeah, you gonna show up on the Senate floor? He's like, no, my wife told me that she had a bad dream, so like, I don't, I'm not gonna do that. And
you gonna listen to your wife?
And he's like, I don't need to give a reason because like, I am Caesar, which is actually a little bit of a hint that he is maybe going down the dark path. Yeah. And the guy's like, well, okay, but we were gonna do some stuff, but if you're, you know, not gonna be well.
I mean, there was, I'm not going to say we didn't get an ice cream cake.
But, in the shape of a crown.
And, you know, was it was going to be a surprise. But, I mean, you know, it doesn't have to happen today. And Caesar is swayed. He's swayed by misinformation.
Reinterpretation of that dream.
Reinterpretation of the dream. Where he's like, what? A dream about you getting stabbed multiple times, that clearly means that your blood is flowing out to the love of Rome?
Seems legit.
Yeah, I buy it.
And there's a cake! So...
oh, there's an... again, ice cream cake. Maybe it's chocolate inside. Who knows?
Come to the Senate. We've got cookies.
I will say though, the Caesar, I think it's the Caesar line, cowards die many times before their deaths.
Oh yeah.
The brave only taste of death but once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's a really cool line.
Oh yeah.
Julius Caesar has a bunch of great lines.
So many. Lean and hungry, the let loose the dogs of war.
When you guys were in high school, I know when Alice was in high school because we were there at the same time, did you guys have to do the Julius Caesar memorization lines?
I remember Macbeth, but I wanted to memorize it anyway, so.
I don't really remember too clearly, honestly. I don't know if we had to do Caesar.
I know that I had to do, actually yep. I had to do Caesar, because yeah. I still remember bits of it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I had to do the Call Me Ishmael opener.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
That was fun.
Oh, fun. Yeah, and fun. The beginning of A Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Pip, remember how our teacher was amazed that our class had learned the Jabberwock so quickly? Apparently, like, every time she's assigned it before, everyone it gets stumped by that one because it's a...
It's a nonsense poem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that year, what was the play you were putting on, Pip? What was the name of that play?
I don't remember the exact name of the play, but it was... It was Wonderland with an exclamation point.
Oh no.
It was a musical.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
And we did Jabberwock in rhythm.
Jabberwocky, talkie talkie.
So everyone who was in drama club had to fight really hard when reciting it to not do it in rhythm.
And when you say everyone in drama club, you mean like a third of the entire class because our school was miniature. Yes.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yo, twas brillig, and the slidy toes did gyre and gimble
in the wave. Oh my God. All mimsy were the borogroves and the mumraths outgrabe. Outgrabe?
And mumraths outgrabe.
Motherfucker. Sorry. I'm adding my own flair to it.
It's good. It's good.
But yeah, no, Julius Caesar, the play, has a bunch of great lines, a bunch of which I remember, still remember because I was forced to memorize them in high school. And I have a terrible memory in general, but I have a decent memory for dialogue.
Yeah.
There's worse things to have a good memory for.
Seriously.
Wait, did we also have to memorize Brutus's speech?
Which one?
The one right before Mark Antony.
Oh.
At the funeral. I don't think we did.
Because it would have been cruel.
I think we didn't have to memorize the entire thing if we had to memorize any of it.
It's so bad for Brutus there, because, you know, he believed that he was doing the right thing.
He did.
He really did. They all thought they were doing the right thing. Except maybe Cassius.
And then didn't Dante write his fan fiction saying that Brutus is in the ninth circle of hell?
Oh, it's one of the great betrayers, yeah.
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 Yeah, it's him, Judas, and some other politician he didn't like.
Well, he not only betrayed Caesar, but he also betrayed his own heart.
He betrayed Caesar, he betrayed his heart, he betrayed Rome. Because after this action, Rome fell into civil disarray and war. You know, he betrayed his wife, because she's like, hey, you want to tell me about these conspiracy things that you're definitely not part of?
Actually, in my notes, I have a lessons learned, listen to your wife.
That's a good point. There weren't a lot of women in this play, but by God, they were all correct.
I mean, I feel like the moral of the story is you've chosen a life partner for a reason. Listen to them.
It's a good lesson. Yeah.
So let's see.
So Caesar gets killed. They all
stabinated a lot.
Yep.
I think everybody stabs him from the conspiracy, right?
Yes.
Everyone at least one stab. Yeah. So
no one was absolved or something.
No one was absolved. No one. There is just one person who's responsible, and there's no one person who isn't responsible.
And they all dip their hands in his blood because they're all super extra.
It's democratic in a way.
Well, it's, yes. But also, and I think it's actually, you know, a worthwhile political point. They're like, yeah, we killed them because that's like what we had to do. But this isn't a secret. This isn't supposed to be some conspiracy, except it was. This is like, this is just what happened in our politics today. Shit got dangerous.
You go to Politico. Front page in the Huffington Post.
Oh, God. I mean, the big thing that fucked them up at that moment was that they let Mark Antony, which is, again, Brutus's fault, survive.
Live. Yeah.
But on the other hand, I also see why they didn't kill him, because Brutus is right. To have killed him would have led to, like, that would make it seem like overkill, like a much more...
coup?
Much more like a coup. As opposed to, let us say, cutting out a tumor. But on the other hand, they didn't take the time to actually convince Mark Antony, because Mark Antony was not wishy-washy like Brutus turned out to be. And so
Mark Antony is no fool.
Well, he might be a fool, but he's, whatever he is, he's certainly, steadfast.
Determined? Ah, yes.
Loyal. But is he loyal to Caesar or is he loyal to Rome? Brutus is loyal to Rome, but it turned out being loyal to Caesar in this case was much more important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he chose to speak, Brutus tried using logos and Mark Antony like, no, these fuckers, they want some pathos.
Dropping down smart. Those Latin words tonight.
What? I took rhetoric.
Whoa.
But yeah, I think I said it before, but like, just Mark Antony's level of sass.
That was beautiful.
Oh yeah.
It's like, these are honorable men.
So aren't they all honorable men?
Like, if it was told today, he'd be giving huge air quotes.
That's what I did.
But I also like how he sort of rounds up the audience. You know, he's more like, he's like, but I'm not gonna talk more about that. Oh, unless you want me to. What?
Do you want me to?
Say it louder for the people in the back.
What?
Woo!
Anyway, so that happens. Not surprisingly, so Brutus is like, we had to do it for a good reason. And Mark Antony is like, it was bullshit. And the people, either they decided that Mark Antony's speech was better, or Mark Antony was the last person to talk.
Yep, either way, bad idea on Brutus's part.
Yeah.
And I think Mark Antony saying, oh, by the way, you all get money, helped.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, why the fuck didn't Brutus, why didn't he secure the will? That was so dumb.
Why didn't he stick around for the speech?
I actually don't understand that. Why didn't he stick around? Is that...
Because he was that self-assured.
That doesn't sound right. I don't know.
When you're covered in another man's blood, maybe don't be that self-assured. That's my lesson I got from this play.
Maybe they were there, but they were like in the back of the Senate going like, oh, what do you think he's talking about? Oh, the audience is cheering him. Should we bounce? I think we should bounce.
I think Cassius bounced like right then.
Oh yeah, he fucked off like immediately.
Oh shit, Brutus is fucked up.
Yeah.
I gotta go.
So and then actually from that point on, the play seems to just kind of speed, you know, go downhill pretty fast. Yeah. We skip ahead. Everything's at war. Caesar's nephew or something like that pops up and is like, hey, Mark Antony, you want to chill with me? And
Octavius,
yeah.
And beat up the terrible coup people, because that's what we've decided they are.
Let's totally make a triumvirate. You, me, and that other guy.
Sir, not appearing in this play.
I think he appears in the actual play, just not in any of the adaptations, because who needs him?
If we loved Julius Caesar the way we loved, like, Hamlet, we'd probably feel the same way about him as we do, like, Fortinbras. Like, how dare you?
Like, every time I watch a version of Hamlet, I'm like, where's Fernrass? I never noticed he's gone until the very, very end, but I miss him.
No.
But, we see sort of the marks of civil war and the leftover bullshit.
Consequences.
Thank you. The consequences of a noble act, theoretically.
Quote unquote.
Yeah. Is the practicalities of war. And people have their wives have variously killed themselves, and corruption is starting to enter the ranks of it, much more obvious than it was before. Cassius has been, taking bribes. Brutus is losing his temper, which I guess for Brutus is pretty grim.
at this point, is it that, Brutus gets visited by a ghost?
Yes, the night before the battle, the first of the two big battles, I guess, he gets visited by Caesar's, great Caesar's ghost! And
I hope you're proud of yourself.
I'm very proud of myself. I've been thinking about that all day. Who basically says, in a much less obvious way than Calpurnia's dream, bro, you're gonna die.
Bro, you're gonna die because you done fucked up.
Not even that, just like FYI, gonna die. And it's from here, by the way, that we get some excellent ghost hunting lore for anybody in the audience who is interested in it. The candles burn low and blue before the ghost is going to appear. And so that is, put that in your back pocket for when you yourself are ghost hunting. Start lighting candles.
Though not in the version we watched.
Yeah, that was bullshit. But anyway, it's in the play. So if it was good enough for the 1600s, it's good enough for now.
Nice.
Thank you.
And then all the conspirators die at the end.
Yeah, I mean, they all commit suicide. In one way or another. Cassius does it in this really wimpy way where he's like, I'm gonna put this cloak over my head and then you stab me. And then Brutus is like, I'm gonna run on this fucking sword. And the end. Like, the end. They die. Everybody dies. Mark Antony's like, Brutus was okay after all.
And then fucks off to his own play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucks off to Cleopatra.
Fucks off to Cleopatra.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so that's the plot. Shakespeare, pretty fucking great.
I mean, there's a reason that his work is still, produced today.
It's always relevant. But anyway, guys, plots?
Who needs a
plot?
What do we got? I nominate Pippin.
Well, one, fuck you. So I was watching a version of Julius Caesar because I didn't feel like rereading the play.
Mm-hmm.
Laziness, I understand it. I respect it.
I was going to go with Shakespeare's meant to be viewed.
Yeah, and when I'm reading the plays, I prefer to do it in a group. Because then you can do the different parts, and at any given moment, one person knows what's going on.
And then someone else will do the Dance of Death.
Yes. But no, and I haven't actually read Julius Caesar since my Shakespeare class, and I don't know if people remember my rant during Macbeth. but it was the same professor. And I don't remember him being as incredibly wrong about Julius Caesar as he was about Macbeth.
But he probably was.
And I was worried that if I reread the play, I would flash back to something he said.
Listeners, you should go back to episode whatever it was for our interpretation of Macbeth and episode 3 and Pippin's hilarious stories of her incredibly wrong professor.
Like, he was still one of my faves.
Yeah, whatever. Keep going.
But he was wrong. Anyway, so there I was watching Julius Caesar. And I was watching, Cassius talk to, Brutus. And is, listening to the sort of language he was using to describe, Julius Caesar. And I was thinking to myself, wow, you're really mad that Julius Caesar didn't sleep with you.
Pippin, into type.
Well, no, it totally read to me like, someone who got totally rejected that way. And I thought to myself, Julius Caesar gets adapted into modern politics all the time. And I figured I'd take it again into the modern, but instead make it the whole bullshit Gamergate thing.
Oh, no.
So Julius Caesar is a woman who has ambition above what other people think that she should have. Because any woman who has ambition is is bad, you guys.
On the internet?
It's more common than you think.
Yeah. And so Cassius, maybe got turned down. Or maybe just looks at a woman in power and goes, well, that can't be.
If her, why not me? That actually reads really.
Right?
I think that stings a little close to home for them.
Yeah.
Reread or rewatch Cassius's whole thing with Brutus in the beginning mm-hmm. with that in mind. And it's like, oh man, that is too familiar.
Yeah. Good call.
And
nice.
I was thinking, you know, Julius Caesar becomes a woman with ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out if Brutus is a dude who tries to be cool
mm-hmm.
and gets lured into, you know, the Gamergate movement.
Oh, the false allies.
Pip, he's that nice guy.
He's such a nice guy. I was trying to figure out if he would also become a woman and it'd be internalized misogyny.
I kind of like that idea because remember, they're supposed to be honorable. Brutus is trying his best. The other thing I could think of is if it was one of those guys who's trying really, really hard to actually be an ally, but has not realized the level of his own patriarchal.
That's what I was thinking, is either that or a woman with internalized misogyny.
Yeah.
I think either way could, you know, sort of turn the mirror on our society mm-hmm. and have something to say.
Damn it, Schneider.
I will point out the obvious, which is that if there is only the one woman, you kill off the one woman in, like, Act 1.
Yeah, well, or Act 3 or whatever. Everybody dies except Mark Antony.
That's a good point.
Mary Antony.
Yeah, Mark Antony, we can gender switch her as well.
I think you should make Mark Antony non-binary.
Ooh, yeah, good point. Good point.
Just step outside that whole thing. They just really, really like Caesar. Again, loyal to the person as opposed to the movement or whatever.
But yeah, okay. So I didn't think about it really beyond that.
No.
Because I was just too enamored with the really strong parallel I saw.
Yeah, you made a good argument for it.
I think at one point someone actually uses the word, in the play, someone mm-hmm. uses the word seduce for what Cassius is doing to Brutus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes,
that does happen.
And that happened after I thought of this and I was like, oh no. It is too close.
Hey, Brutus.
Oh, you're too sweet to even try to be a dick. Yeah, that's pretty much what I have. And then I can only hope that the Gamergate movement would go down in flames like the conspiracy did.
Well, but here's the thing. Like, yes, it went down in flames, but I mean, I think that you can always go deeper. That's the nice thing about Julius Caesar is that it lends itself to either,
to go deeper.
It lends itself to either I don't want to say shallow, just by the numbers plot match, or you can go really fucking deep. You probably have to tie in Antony and Cleopatra, honestly. I think you could do something really interesting and political and also gender studies-ish.
Which is really right where I live.
Basically. You know that I want you to write this, right?
Yeah.
Like we always do.
It's starting to lose meaning by this point.
All right, so that's you.
Yeah, that's me, short and simple.
Nice.
Short, simple, to the point. Question, is she like a professional game player or is she like a game developer?
Julius Caesar,
there we go.
See, at this point, I don't know enough about the gaming industry to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that she's in a position to become CEO of a major game company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe she's heir apparent to
Shigeru Miyamoto.
Yes. You know, maybe she's poised to take over Nintendo or, you know, an in-universe equivalent.
I mean, you still get it from all levels of game development. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
People are sick on the internet, but yeah.
Well, it'd be even great if it wasn't even this position of power. Like, forget, like, being in charge of Nintendo, because this wasn't Caesar. This was a potential for Caesar to maybe turn bad. I mean, so all you really had to do was have somebody who speaks out, who could potentially, like, oh, she's been getting movie deals. And not, you know, the equivalent thereof. Mm-hmm. Like, what if it goes to her head? Which is a ridiculous argument and no reason to kill somebody. But it is the
lead designer.
Fear.
Yeah,
it's the fear. Like, what if she's part of the design team, but she also happens to be popular on Twitter? And she gets popular enough on Twitter, people are like, you know what? Maybe they might put her as the team lead. We can't have that.
Yeah.
She'll make it all girly.
So.
Yeah, they get pissy at a comms director who are making fan art. So, you know, it happens. Mm-hmm. Like, Brent, you remember what happened with Mighty Number 9 and before, you know, it came out.
I prefer not to think about Mighty Number 9. That was a disappointment.
Well, like, during one of those instances, a communications director, I think, I do not recall her name, had drawn some fan art of the prospective protagonist. And like, why not have that character female? I think the character was named Beck, which was generally neutral enough to, like, to work. And, yeah, they went mad, the Gamer Gators.
Yeah.
Terrible people doing terrible things.
But it's a thing that we can see happening all the time, which is why this version of Julius Caesar works more than I wish it would.
I'm totally down for it, actually. And if you took a very, like, Law and Order stylized version of what you were talking about, Alex, you know, like, taken from the headlines, version of that, you know, just scrub off some serial numbers, I think that would be a very fascinating telling.
Okay.
All right, that's me. Who's next?
I'll go. Damn it! It's different if I volunteer.
Cat volunteers as tribute.
All right. Okay, so my interpretation. Here's my plot treatment. My plot treatment is this is going to be set in the future. Near future, because I'm into near future right now. You know, I had a different idea before, but I'm going to go with, I'm going to steal something from this very podcast.
What?
I know. And Alex, feel free to tell me if I need to fuck off. But I want to do a big thing about the misinformation. That strikes me so cool. Do you guys know the theory behind post-structuralism?
I mean, I'm sure I was taught it at some point.
Okay, so as it was explained to me, Foucault's definition of post-structuralism.
Wow.
I'm bringing in Foucault.
Name dropping.
And by the way, audience, if any of you know that I'm wrong, please feel free to write in.
Yell at her, not us.
The way it was described to me is that you can figure out the shape of something, not by looking at it directly, but by looking at the things around it and inferring what the thing is by the outlines of everything else. Does that make sense?
That sounds like Plato's shadow as well.
See, I was thinking of the blind mice trying to figure out that they were touching an elephant.
All of that and more. But also, you can think of it in terms of, like, for instance, the
negative space.
Negative space. Thank you. What is in the negative space? Well, if you can't figure that out from looking at it because it's a negative space, you figure it out from everything around it. So what I would like is a primary, secondary, tertiary source book where you're getting these primary sources, stories about what's happening. Something's happening. Then you get like this secondary source of like, you know, the review of a movie that's taken, you know, that somebody saw, and they, something else being like, you know, here's a diary entry. All these little bits of information, none of which is reliable. And from that, you put together a narrative of what must be happening or have happened, in this time, in this place. So near future, let's say, fuck it, I'm putting it in Vancouver. Why not? I like Vancouver.
The evil woman who lives after them, eh?
It's Vancouver, or I don't know, Argentina. Somewhere that doesn't get a lot of airplay in American fiction. So a nice opportunity to have a setting that requires the average American reader have to rely upon the narrative as it's being given to them. So they're forming out this story. And the story is Julius Caesar. There was a ruler. He got totally fucking stabbed. Shit's going down.
So the fall of Rome as told by Twitter.
Basically, yes. Twitter, Tumblr.
Oh, so each chapter could have like different way, like different social media portrayals of the event.
I mean, but also taking it, removing it a step further. So I want this to be a story about also how history.
The tweets that show up in the history book.
Yes. But also how history is interpreted. Like, I want the reader to eventually figure out, oh shit, this is modern Caesar. I don't want to have a lot of differentiation from the actual plot of Caesar. I want to be really fucking obvious once you figure it out. It's the figuring it out part. And the message that the reader then gets is, oh shit, if I look back on history now, is there a story that I'm not aware of that would make all of this?
You can maybe set it up like pre-Caesar stabbing. Mm-hmm. You know, you have like the tweets and social media posts of the conspirators. And it's like, what are they talking about? And, you know, Brutus talking about the plight of...
I'd do this for Vancouver.
I would love it if I managed to do it such that the murder never actually happens on stage. Nobody directly says, I did it. Nothing like that. I think it would be a difficult read, but I'm into it. And I want the reader to come out the other end and be like, okay, cool, this was Caesar. This is a cool interpretation. But also, I'm looking at my current situation and being like, I'm making one story out of what's happening, but is it the actual, is it what's in the negative space?
Negative space. There you go. The title.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes, it is. Thank you.
You're welcome.
See, no, write it.
I kind of want to write it. Oh, fuck.
See, I was just sitting here the whole time thinking, man, this is why we have archives.
Anyway, that's me, guys. I want to kind of go meta. I want to really engage the reader. I want to make this a book that they assign in high school and college classes.
The tweets between.
No, it's negative space. Title. That's what we're sticking with.
Nope, tweets between now.
You can write a fanfic of my book and call it the tweets between.
Nice. Excellent. I'll be all in tweet form. All right. Between me and Al.
I'll go.
You sure?
Nope, but I'll go anyways. Right.
I mean, you really already won with the misinformation thing, so
oh, yeah.
Everything you say now is gravy.
I'm sorry I had to steal it.
I'm just going to do Julius Caesar with magic.
Okay.
Oh.
Go on.
Right. So, like, this isn't just, you know, Rome. This is Rome, city in the sky, that shit we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Are we talking steampunk here, Alex? Or airpunk?
No, Howl's Moving Castle, punk.
Oh, okay, cool.
Or not, actually, Laputa, city in the sky, ba-da-da-da-da, punk.
Laputa, yeah.
Like, I actually think the name in the West is just Castle in the Sky.
What's Laputa?
The Castle in the Sky is a... It's a Studio Ghibli film. I think it's just called Laputa in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But the name of that city is Laputa.
Okay.
And what that city was, or who even lived there, is kind of a mystery. All we know is that there's a girl with a magic necklace that leads straight to it.
Okay.
It happens more often than you'd think.
And there's, like, magic-powered robots, right?
Yeah, there's magic-powered robots. And it also has an action granny, so, you know.
The granny conspiracy.
She's an air pirate.
Excellent.
I'm in love with her.
So how does this map to Julius Caesar? Or
no, not at all. Well, I was just using it as reference for Bran.
Wait, what?
Yeah. But airpunk is basically magic, but with like castles in the sky and or cities in the sky.
Yeah.
Okay, so cities. All right, sorry. I thought somehow you were doing a fusion.
I could do a fusion. Want to do a fusion?
No, just fusion. Go with what you were going for. One idea at a time, one idea!
Like, nothing much actually changes because, you know, it's all about that conspiracy. But that soothsayer man, he has that magic. He brings the glow, he brings a voice of the heavens, not just some guy covered in chicken and trails in the street.
Like you do.
So he's much more of a, no, seriously, you should listen to me?
Yeah.
So, does Caesar heed the word better then?
No, that's like, I'm Caesar. I have all the magics. I have the magic of the state. I can control the fucking and MacGuffin that pilots the city.
Does the city crash when he dies?
Oh, you fucking know it. Like, not when he dies, but you know, when the riots start.
It starts to fall, literally. Yeah.
Oh my God, the rise and fall of Rome.
Right. Instead of like, you maybe like, I don't know, 200, 300 years after Caesar, or it's, you know, maybe 20 minutes after.
Listen, if Shakespeare could condense actual events, so can we.
Yeah. Think of it like Angel Island from Sonic & Knuckles.
Brutus, quick, let's stab the Master Emerald.
And other references Kat doesn't get.
Nope.
Yes.
Doing it all for you, Kat. This is what you get.
What? You put Foucault into this, we're pulling Sonic the Hedgehog.
Excuse me for my liberal arts education. I like bringing French dudes into
Sonic
shit.
Is not liberal arts.
Brendan and I are going to be over here with our master's degrees.
Whoa. First of all, Pippin, how dare you?
Also, I strongly suspect that most people with master's degrees have played Sonic the Hedgehog. I could be wrong, though.
Listen,
do you have a master's degree? Let us know.
This will be a new Twitter quiz.
Anyway.
Sorry. Go on, Alex.
Right. And so, stabbing Caesar when he's got all that magic protection shit ain't going to be easy. So we're getting curses.
Okay.
Foiled again.
Maybe that's why they can't kill Mark Antony.
Yeah, sure.
Oh.
Maybe he's literally protected by the gods or something.
I like this idea that you're doubling down on, you know, the ghosts, the dreams.
Oh, yeah.
The soothsayers. Really bringing them to the fore. Because unlike, I don't know, like, it happens in Julius Caesar, but it doesn't seem to be kind of the turning point like it is in Macbeth, for instance. Or Hamlet.
It seemed like in the play itself, they treated the soothsayer as a crazy guy and the dreams as, that's just dreams, not omens.
Yeah.
Never ignore a warning.
Never.
Yeah.
No matter what the source.
Even if you don't know what it means. Although, like, I do like that in Julius Caesar, they were all really obvious warnings, like, Ides of March, beware.
Yeah.
If you go out on the Ides of March, you'll get stabbed.
I had a dream where you were stabbed.
You'll get
on
stabbed.
On the Ides of March, actually, in the Senate. You were stabbed in the Senate on the Ides of March.
Hey, all of these people are here to visit you and bring you to the Senate. It's not weird at all.
Is it weird that you're wearing long robes that are perfect for concealing knives?
No. These are my normal murder, I mean visiting clothes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so they have... I just imagine, like, all sorts of magical chaos happening upon Caesar dying.
Oh, yeah. Mark Antony laying out this fucking, not compulsion, but, you know, charm spell as he speaks.
Oh, the will. the will. The will is the will of Caesar. It's yeah, like a
magic of Caesar.
Yeah, it's like a, not a conjuration, but a, but it is in and of itself a spell.
Yeah.
The conspirators do blood magic.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, maybe that's why Brutus was so important to bring into the conspiracy. Brutus is his blood brother.
Brutus is an honorable man.
Yeah.
And intention matters.
Intention matters.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Although that's a very Catholic way of thinking about magic.
Listen, I didn't mean it to be.
Well, I mean, in this fantasy world, you could have, like, you know, that weird ritual that you don't really see much nowadays in fiction being portrayed, where, like, the two people make a cut on their hands and shake. It's like, we're blood brothers now. You don't see that much anymore, but it might be something similar to that with Brutus and Caesar.
Yeah. So, magic.
Magic.
And fucking spells going everywhere in the last acts as they go to war.
Just trying, I can almost imagine Brutus just flinging himself off the side of the city at the very end, and thus the city stops falling.
I mean, if you want to not, like, you want to ignore, like, Antony and Cleopatra, you just want to actually just end the fucking story. Yeah, his sacrifice could be what
stops the fall of
Rome.
Quote unquote Rome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, delay it for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's lower than it used to be.
Which in and of itself is symbolic of the
damage done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, it reminds me of, like, the whole idea of a city on the hill, a city of the heavens, a city of angels.
They're no longer above the clouds.
Mm-hmm. Were they ever really?
And then you can still bring Antony and Cleopatra into it.
Yeah.
Egypt suddenly comes crashing up next to them. It's like, ah, damn it.
Egypt shows up at the party 15 minutes late with Starbucks.
All right, so that's what I got.
Okay. So then there was me. I think it's appropriate that I ended up last here, because between Pip and Kat, like, my original thought was completely covered, because I was originally thinking about, social media and the effects, how it's a, you know, like a parallel for Caesar for today with all the, you know, effect of the public and all that. But you know what? That's why we are talented here.
You know, we, all of us in our time, have our story ideas taken first and have to scramble real fast.
So here's what I'm doing. I am taking this to the far future. We're doing, think of it just as, like, your kind of mental construct here. We can file off serial numbers later. We're thinking an episode or movie of Star Trek where we have the good captain being taken down by, like, maybe rival captains or something. Like, this captain's about to become, like, the admiral or head of the fleet, that kind of thing. And a plot happens such that they basically set him up as an ambush as he comes in from lightspeed, and boom, 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 death. Go.
Everyone fires one photon torpedo.
Yes. Yes.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
I like that.
Because, like, when everybody knows, when you come in from lightspeed, you don't have shields, and only...
Everybody knows that.
And only his allies would have the transponder codes to know exactly where he's coming in. So, I mean, yeah.
But also, they've calculated exactly how much force it would need to disable and destroy the ship, and they do only that amount to really make it clear that this was the point. That this wasn't about overkill or revenge. This was just to solve a problem.
Yep. Though Mark Anthony's in that escape pod. Oh.
Oh, yeah. Mark Anthony.
Or what if he was like, I'm on vacation at this other planet. Oh, time to get back leave. Together with my... He's on leave. Yes.
Oh.
Oh, poor Mark Anthony. I feel bad for...
Wait, does this Mark Anthony have a Riker beard?
Of course. He's number one.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, just imagine... Yeah, and actually the captain can just be played by Patrick Stewart.
Perfect. I'm pretty sure he's done Julius Caesar.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he'd be down for it. Just imagine what it would take for a bunch of really shitty Starfleet captains to betray Picard, who's about to be, like, elevated to admiral. I mean...
Part of it is not that, the senators weren't necessarily shitty people. Like, that could be part of the whole thing, too, is, like, well, what drove these ostensibly good men to think this, or people, to do this?
Again, we're filing off serial numbers, but the idea that the captain's been compromised somehow... Due to influences from battle or influences Vulcans. From other Vulcans, yeah.
He's been talking to the Klingons.
Yeah. Ooh, I like it.
Mm.
Yeah, so he's clearly been influenced by these other alien races. He's going to be giving up the sovereignty of Earth.
I actually kind of like that whole, the thing you just said there, because it also brings in a none too subtle dig at, not racism,
xenophobia?
Thank you. Of xenophobia. Because if you think about it, there's nothing actually wrong with talking to other alien races.
Of course not.
But at the same time, that obviously we want to protect Earth, right, guys?
But yeah, no, totally.
I like it.
Yeah, works.
Yeah, again.
Like, I like it so enough that I would be shocked if it isn't already, like, a tie-in novel, at least, with that plot.
Oh, we could probably check and see.
Because it'd be so great.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the one photon each. Oh.
That's pretty good.
Any other thoughts or questions about Caesar in space?
Space, 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 space. Yeah, no, I think it would work really well. What falls?
Ooh, the Federation.
God damn.
Yeah, just imagine the turmoil. Again, we can file off the serial numbers afterwards, but... The Federation is the thing that falls afterwards. I mean, not Earth or anything like that, just the unity that it represented just by this gigantic betrayal, that would send ripples in a galactic alliance.
So unlike Alex's, that's going to be a single shot and we ignore Antony and Cleopatra, this sounds like the beginning of a...
Gigantic space opera?
Space opera series, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll call it a game of stars.
Yeah, nice, nice.
Nice.
I mean, take a story you like, put in space, brand new story.
Yay! Yeah.
And that's the professional writing advice from No Story is Sacred.
All right.
So,
I mean, prove me wrong.
So are we all ready to try for a game?
Mm. A game? Yes.
All right.
Do we want to try a new one or... Well, the nature of our treatments actually kind of removed that new one from the table.
I don't know. I don't think it has.
Yes, let's do the new one.
So we came up with this this game just this afternoon, and we're going to be calling it, at least for now, Everything Changed When the Baristas Attacked. And this is just basically taking what we've already done several times in the show and just formally making it into a game. We are taking the original story of Julius Caesar and making it into an AU of some sort, an alternate universe.
I like how you said that we've done it multiple times instead of Pippin's done it multiple times.
Well, so speaking of Pippin, you should go first.
What?
You should definitely go first.
Yeah.
All right. The title references a coffee shop AU. But just to show that this doesn't have to be limited to just coffee shop AUs, even though they're amazing and everyone should have one. I'm actually going to do His Dark Materials AU.
Oh.
To give everyone a demon.
Which is the idea that, like, your soul basically is exterior and is an animal form. And can talk.
Yes. And has a funny name.
Okay.
What they do.
Pantalaimon is totally normal.
But for instance, I have always thought that my personal daemon, if I had one, would be an orangutan. The one and only great ape who does not live in a group, but is rather a solitary creature.
And you can find out the rest of our daemons in a future minisode.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Okay, so Dark Materials, was Julius Caesar, go.
Yeah. Listen, I didn't think it through when I started.
Well, you can speculate on the demons of, like, Caesar and Brutus. I mean, geez.
I mean, it's super awkward, mm-hmm. and I kind of hate that I'm going to say this, but what if their wives are their demons and they be... No, that's awful.
Yeah. That's really awful.
Except they don't do anything else, and they're there to go, hey, I have this other idea.
Well, not just that, but, you know, there's a thing where the demons can talk to one another as well. And so you can have, for instance, Cassius and Brutus talking to each other on one level, and then their demons talking to each other on this secondary level. Possibly, I mean, you could do this whole mirror trick where, you know, Brutus is an honorable man, but his daemon, you see him being wishy-washy. Cassius is only, you know, trying to prevent the Caesar from becoming a tyrant, but his daemon is talking about jealousy.
Yeah. And just because, you know, image-wise, as you know, Julius Caesar can have, like, a heraldic daemon and, like, a lion.
And maybe that's why Caesar thinks that maybe it would be a good idea. Or, like, they're all concerned because he has that heraldic daemon. Maybe he thinks that he does deserve it. Like, they're all making interpretations. That's the thing about the His Dark Materials AU, is that you can make more assumptions about people based on what their daemons are. Because you can see it. You're seeing their souls, literally.
It's like, yeah, you have the misinformation, but the demons are really showing the truer picture.
Exactly.
But even then, you can be judging books by their cover.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lean and hungry looking daemon.
What if his daemon was a fox, or what if it was a rat, or one of those things?
I was thinking a snake.
There you go. Oh, getting it.
Getting Slytherin.
Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking getting betrayal in there.
Listen, snakes have a lot of symbolic weight on them.
Why'd it have to be snakes?
Oh, yep. Right. I like that.
All right.
Wait, what's Antony? He's a daemon.
A falcon.
Of course. Nice.
I want him to have a bro kind of...
Falcon actually works because it kind of image-wise works with his Cleopatra. Because you know what daemon she's going to have?
An asp. Oh, and actually it also works because falcons, of course, fly to their master's hands.
Mm.
What? And then the senator's demons kill Caesar's demon, and aww, they can't get to each other, and it's super sad.
Oh, that is super sad.
You're welcome.
All right, I love it.
Okay.
Bren.
Okay. I'm going to give the coffee shop AU to either Kat or Al to speculate on, because I just came up with what I wanted to do, and we are going to do a sci-fi convention committee AU.
Oh, no.
And all the...
convention politics.
Yeah.
And everyone who's ever been on a con suddenly flashed how it would work.
Yep.
We're having, like, flashbacks.
Who stole the cash box?
Oh, God.
Oh, yep.
Oh, God. The thing that that never gets forgiven.
Never
you
gets...
You can do anything else.
But not
to
that.
A really bad degree. Wow.
You could bring it modern and start talking about things like the harassment policies.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, definitely. We can have a message in this?
Messages in my science fiction?
My God.
He has a lean and pervy look.
But wait, guys, remember, we don't like messages or politics in our science fiction.
What?
Anyway, go on.
That's pretty much it. I was just thinking, because basically anybody who's ever been involved in the, even in a peripheral sense, the running of a science fiction convention, which I could think all of us to some degree or another have been involved in the running of a con, mm-hmm. right?
Or at least have seen other people do it.
Yeah.
We've all heard the gossip, if nothing else.
Yeah.
We've done volunteer, like we were like 12, but he done volunteer.
We've been doing volunteer work since we were like kids. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
But even then, you can kind of observe just all the even light politicking and stuff like that that happens when a con is being run. And heck, maybe the inciting incident is that they are going for the Worldcon bid.
Oh. You know what's actually really cool is if they have if they're like in the running for world. Now that's if you make the con itself Caesar and you have all the other cons trying to. I like the idea though. I want to get Worldcon in there to make it have some stakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the Worldcon that made it so there would be no Worldcon there for decades after.
Oh my God. Disclave. Do you guys remember Disclave? The convention under the sea. We're going to save that for a blog post. So anyway,
I always have this like, you know, thought of like a script that could be written is just the hijinks that can ensue in trying to run even a small size convention.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to try and riff on that, but with a maybe con that gets ousted or something and all the fallout that happens immediately afterwards.
Oh, guys, this is another ripped from the headline situation.
Mm-hmm.
There was a situation that happened very like this very recently. Some listeners may know what I'm talking about if I talk about the, it happened a couple months ago, happened in the Midwest.
Ah.
That's the only hint you get.
All right. So, who's next?
I'll go.
All right.
Cause you know what? I am not doing coffee shop.
Ooh.
I want to do, there's a particular kind of AU that is, the soulmate AU.
Yes!
And the weird variant that I've seen of this, usually, the weird AU is that you have written on your body some, like the first word that your soulmate will say to you. So, you know, you go around the world and try to figure out who your soulmate is. There's a variant on that, which is you have on your body the last words you will hear before you die. I want to do a variant of that. So everyone's walking around with like this sort of knowledge. They don't quite know what's going on. They all have like there are happy interpretations, but not great ones because so many people fucking die in this and from betrayal. I want it to just be like this constant, you know, man behind the curtain who masks falling dramatic irony type thing.
Wait, just so I can understand more the last words thing. The other person has the last words you say to them or the last thing they say to you or?
I'm going to say, I think that this should be, I wish I could do like whoever will kill you, but that doesn't make sense because not everybody dies from murder, or do they?
Well, just the last words you hear are.
Yes.
Because I'm trying to figure out who gets "and you, Brutus," written on them. That could have a happy interpretation.
It really could. Oh my God, maybe that's why Brutus and Caesar are in love, because of course they are. In my picture here, the Senate, Rome, it's all a huge polyamorous situation. And so, you know, they share some kind of bond, whatever. But part of it is because, you know, Caesar has Brutus's, the last words you speak are going to be on your body.
Okay.
Last words you speak are going to be on your body, because everybody has lines, because this is a fucking play. That's how Brutus and Caesar know that they are going to be buds. Because, by God, Caesar has, you know, he directly references Brutus on his fucking body. And so they're friends. Little do we know, etc. And so
and forth. For all they know, his last words are said with fondness.
Exactly.
You know, and you, Brutus, as opposed to, and you, Brutus. Mm-hmm.
And you, Brutus, you're my bro.
Like, and you were able to make it to my deathbed side, whatever, as well. Thank God, you know, I don't know.
Oh, yay, Brutus, you get to live after me.
Yay.
Yay.
And you were there, and you were there.
Mine says, eat a dick, Cassius.
The only downside is that, you might get people who are planning their, you know, their last lines, which actually could be part of their culture. One of the nice things about these soulmate AUs is that you end up having to sort of go into the, what develops culturally from these, from this being a part of their reality. So you have people who might be planning their death specifically. There might be the people who, like, maybe they give birth to kids who are going to hear as their last words, die murderer. Or I confess I was a sinner and therefore I go to the gallows gratefully. It's like, well, that, you know, well, you were born to be bad. Yeah, click.
Yeah, now, I was.
And maybe, you know, one day in a different story entirely, some kid accidentally, you know, doesn't get murdered and grows up. And it turns out he's just, you know, that's the line he said in a play after he was famous on stage. And then he had a heart attack.
Oh, that's tragic.
I know. I like how that's more tragic than the fact that I literally just implied a great deal of infanticide. But okay. Which also brings soothsayers into it. You know, maybe there's this whole society of people who go around being like, by the way, the last words you will ever hear are me saying, you're gonna die. Okay. or something like that. I don't know. I like that idea of fucking around with, subverting expectations and subverting reality. Cool. Which ties in vaguely but neatly with, the misinformation theme of Julius Caesar by itself.
And see, when you first said, soulmate AU, I was thinking that maybe Brutus had Rome written on his heart.
Aww.
I will take that as well. But then what does everybody else have? Like, Mark Antony, Cleopatra?
Not Rome.
Whoa, man. Mark Antony has Cleopatra. But I think that one's a little bit more, I don't know, because that one seems pretty straightforward. Everyone does seem quite devoted to their, you know, people.
Loved ones.
Yeah. In as much as we see any loved ones. So I like doing the slightly, the variant on that and then fucking around with the culture.
It's like the Death Note variant.
Huh. And that's me.
I'll be very quick about this one. And I'm going to actually just take the coffee shop AU. I was going to do a band AU, but then I couldn't really actually figure out how it would work.
All right.
You don't know enough about boy bands.
Yeah, pretty much. But the coffee shop AU, it's going to be like one of those, you know, indie coffee shops. But like, hey, did you hear the owner, Caesar? He's going to turn this into a franchise.
He's selling out.
Oh, like if they were all, what's it called?
Employees.
Employee owned? Yeah. Previously?
Yeah.
A co-op.
Democratic.
Or like, pretty much like Empire Records.
I was just thinking, damn the man, save the empire.
Yeah.
Yes.
And of course, the Roman people are the customers.
Legit. They really don't care. At the end of the day, they just want their coffee.
Yeah.
And which makes sense with, in terms of like the Roman people. At the end of the day, they just want somewhere to live. But of course, when you have all this infighting, possibly they're going to lose the lease.
Customers, this is what Caesar was going to give you. One coffee free on Tuesdays.
Complimentary scones.
Oh,
scones. Shit, man.
Nice.
Where's this coffee
I'm
shop?
I'm down with Caesar now.
Yeah.
Biscotti. I thought that was as far as we were going. That's what Brutus said. But scones?
Yeah.
Nice. How do you assassinate the, so to speak, the owner of the coffee shop?
You get him fired.
Yeah.
Ah.
Or you could take it a little step further and just make it straight up murder mystery.
Oof.
Kind of depressing.
It was going to be a comedy, you know.
Oh.
Murder comedy. It can happen.
True. And, you know, Cassius and Brutus are making out somewhere.
Obviously.
Since Pip failed to...
Listen, all my characters were indeterminate gender except for Cassius and Julius Caesar. So a lot of people are making out and I didn't decide.
You know what? Feelings are boring. Kissing is awesome. And on that note...
I feel like we learned a lot about Caesar.
Well, awesome, guys. You know, thank you for going on this journey with me today on Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
Listen, we all went all over the place, but you know what?
So many aside.
All roads lead to Rome.
Oh.
As always, if you have a story to submit, head on over to nostoryissacred.com/submission. Follow us on Twitter at nostoryissacred or send us an email through contact@nostoryissacred.com. Your hosts have been Alex McDonald, Brendan McDonald, Pippin McDonald, and Catherine Creighton. Editing for this episode done by Brendan. Transcript done by Ashley DaCosta. Hi, Ashley. Art by Jay Wolf. Show note and transcript are available at nostoryissacred.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and please rate, review, and subscribe to No Story is Sacred. You can also visit our Patreon page to support the show and get neat rewards at patreon.com/nostoryissacred. See you next time when we talk about and take apart the book Ready Player One.
Soon to be a movie.
Bum, bum, bum.
Ta-da! Yeah. Until then, we're No Story is Sacred, and any story can be changed. I'm Kat.
I'm Pippin.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Brendan.
And we're...
No Story is Sacred.